I'd like to remind all participants this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you, Kelly. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the IRTPD Working Group call on Monday, 9th of September, 2013. On the call today, we have James Bladel, Chris Chaplow, Paul Diaz, Angie Graves, Barbara Knight, and Mike O'Connor. We have apologies from Holly Raish and Volk Grayman. And from staff, we have Marika Connings, Lars Hoffman, and myself, Shudya Shavadin. May I please remind all participants to please state their names before speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, Mikey.
Thanks, Julia, and welcome to the call, everybody. We'll do the usual deal where we take a look at the agenda and the statements of interest. I'm going to run the call today because James was not able to make it last week, and he sort of wants to play catch-up, so I'll run the call. As you can see, we've got an agenda that's really sort of a repeat of last week's. We made a lot of progress today, or last time, and we sort of want to re-go through that and just make sure that we're all comfortable with where we wound up, and then carry on from there. So take a look at the agenda, and then if there's anything for statements of interest that you'd like to tell us about, this would be a good time to do that. All right, then. Saw Aubrey pop into and then fall out of the Adobe chat. I hope she can rejoin us. What's on your screen in front of you is a summary of the conversation. It's essentially a beginning draft of the section on of the final or the initial report on charter section charter question C, and I think what we want to do is sort of repeat our discussion a bit and maybe clarify some points in here. So I think I'll just drag us through this sort of paragraph by paragraph. Just a reminder, this charter question is the one that says whether dispute options for registrants should be developed and implemented as part of the policy, being the IRTP. Registrants currently depend on registrars to initiate a dispute on their behalf. And the first paragraph reflects essentially, oh, James, go ahead, jump right in.
Oh, sorry, Mikey. I didn't know if you were going to take a cue. I didn't want to interrupt your flow there, but I just wanted to point out or reiterate some conversation that we had offline, which was that one of my concerns about this particular charter question, I actually think it's the most complex charter question that we have in this working group, is that if someone is disputing a transfer which also included a change of registrant, then they would not be the registrant, and that they would be some sort of ex-registrant or former registrant, or at least claiming to be that. And so what we're really talking about here is whether it would be more of a dispute option open to the general public with some limitations. And that's where I think that this actually gets a little more complicated. So, but I'll let you continue on. I just wanted to get that part on the record at the outset so we can have some context for our discussion.
Yeah, I think that's great. And, you know, I think that your introduction of the idea starts to hint at some of the ways that we might be able to address it. So, good one to get on the list of topics not to forget, because we do want to put some boundaries on this so that not just anybody on the planet can file one of these things. That would be a problem. And so then with that, let me carry on with my little backgrounder, which is that in general there seems to be agreement that there should be some sort of mechanism for what is abbreviated RDNH, which in our parlance in the old days was registered domain name holder, but we've got an interesting puzzler going on in the chat, which the UDRP has the same acronym for reverse domain name hijacking. So there's another one for our punch list of things that we need to resolve for the report. And that might tie into a point that James just made, which is we probably need some sort of term anyway, like ex-registrant or former registrant or claimant or something, so people can put their thinking caps on. The group notes that there's the possibility of some gaming, and we need to address that. And so, just for purposes of today, I think I'll use claimant. So the first and most important step would be to assure that the claimant used to be the legitimate registered domain name holder, and for him or her to build a substantial record forming the basis of this TDRP. And I think that was sort of at least from my vantage point running the meeting, that was one of the most interesting ideas that came out of the call last week, that gives us some leverage at solving some of these puzzlers, which is the notion that sort of like leading up to a court case, especially a court case at an appeal, there's this idea that there needs to be a record and that the appeal process might not be granted if the record was insufficient to support it. Kevin Erdman sort of brought that into the discussion, and I liked it a lot. So that little bulleted list was sort of our preliminary try at that. And, we can circle back to that. We also talked a little bit about bringing the conversation around to the registry participation question, which is one that came up earlier as well. And I'm starting to warm up to the idea, if we could come up with a good list like this and then leave the registries out of that list but still provide appropriate safeguards, I can get persuaded on that. We talked a little bit about costs. And here again, we had, I think Christine came up with some ideas that we may want to touch on. And then on the next page, I'm going to skip the footnote, I don't want to take the whole call just repeating what we wrote. We eventually came down to the remaining questions. What would the steps be? What's the role of the registries? Can the registrar still launch it? That's a good question. That's a new one for me. And can potential costs be reduced by streamlining policy process? So I think that's enough introduction. I sort of want to stop talking, let you talk for a while, let a cue start to develop. Let me circle back just as a member of the group. Is anybody else on the call part of the group that was in the charter question drafting team with me? Because if you were, by all means, chime in on this. But the issue that James raised is, I think, a friendly amendment kind of thing. We certainly, when we were writing this question, weren't intending the risk that James is describing. We weren't intending to make this available to anybody. We were intending it for former registrants, ex-registrants, something like that. And so, James, I don't know if you've had a chance to think at all about ways to fix that puzzler, whether language like that would work. But to the extent that you have, I'd love to hear your ideas. Go ahead.
So not a fix, but just more thought on that issue is that Well, first off, I think we should say that, as written, the scenario where a person or organization remains the registered name holder, but the transfer was to a registrar not of their choosing, I think that that's essentially what we're talking about disputing. But I think the intention was, when we say dispute a transfer, we meant dispute a change of control of the domain name from one registrant to another. And I think that that's where the language starts to fail us a little bit because, you know, as we mentioned, there are former registrants challenging the new registrant. And I think one of the thoughts I had while I was mowing the grass this weekend, which was, how do you determine the veracity of someone's claim to be a former registrant of a domain name? Because while there are third-party services out there, none of them, those services and functions of who is caching and archiving don't necessarily fall under the ICANN remit. I know that registrars have obligations under the current and new RAA to retain registrant records for domain name, but only for a fixed time period and only, you know, when the domain name transfers away. And I think that the European registrars are even pushing back on that and saying if they no longer have a commercial relationship with the registrant, you know, there's some restrictions on how long they can keep that data. So I would be curious as to what the data retention requirements are for registries and whether they can help provide some sort of authoritative record of who used to be a registrant, because I think that's a challenge. And then I think that the point of this question coming up might be the scenario where someone wants to raise a TDRP, but the registrar won't do that for them. They have an uncooperative registrar, and I think, do we want to provide them some other options? But I think the registrar plays an important role here, because the registrar is essentially vouching for the claimant's status as a former registrant. So I think that that is an important function or an important consideration of why we might want to keep the registrar involved in this process. So I know that's not any fixes, Mikey. It's just some additional thoughts on it.
Well, I think, you know, I'm quite attracted to Kevin's idea, because this series of essentially steps to build a record, because it seems to me that, you know, I'm not sure we captured the list quite right. I think step one is some sort of indication that, well, step one is unchanged from the situation today. There has to be a demonstration that the registrar has been contacted about this issue and some sort of documentation that they were either unwilling or unable to respond or resolve it. There's this additional series of steps. We'll leave out the issue of whether the registry is in the chain right now and take that up later, maybe. But there has to be further record built. And I think that safeguards could be built into that process to sort of address the issues that you're raising, James. The puzzler about length of time is interesting. Do you have a sense of what that length of time is? Is it like a week or a year or a decade?
Especially for current, I'm sorry to jump in. This is James speaking for the record. For the current RA, 3 years after the domain name has expired or transferred away. I think that some, and I'm probably misunderstanding or misstating this issue. I don't know if Volker's not on the call today, but during RAA negotiations, it was pointed out that some European registrars may have difficulty meeting the data retention requirements because they no longer have a commercial relationship once the registrar leaves them as a customer, that, you know, their ability to continue to hold that data is I guess, restricted or something like that. So it's 3 years, but, you know, it really depends on if there's any kind of statute of limitations imposed on whatever process or appeals mechanism we develop.
Yeah, okay, so I think we have to put that on the puzzler pile and just do a little research to find out what those are. So I'm going to put that in the pile of questions yet to be answered. Maybe hand that one off to Lars and Marika to do a little research on to see where we're at. But I want to sort of presume that puzzler away for the moment. You know, I think that though the issue that you're raising, James, is one that intuitively, at least, I feel like we could figure out a way to address. And I wouldn't want to sink this whole thing. I think one of the, and maybe let me just amplify, one of the things that the charterers, the drafters of this question, felt pretty strongly is that in general, the IRTP TDP, the whole pile, is primarily, or at least has a strong underlying goal of protecting registrants from being abused by recalcitrant registrars. And so this is one of the ones that we did put in the more difficult to resolve pile, more contentious pile. We tended to push these later into the process, which in hindsight, I think turns out to be a pretty good decision because we've got a pretty good record leading up to it. I want to check and make sure that this is not in, you know, likely to completely sink the idea that we want to provide an avenue for the former registrant to essentially have a process by which they can appeal either a decision that they think is unfair or a registrar that's simply not not answering them. Are you in that place, James, and using this issue as a way to achieve that end, or are you simply looking for a way to do this that doesn't create an unimplementable process?
Is okay to jump in on that, Mike?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
So I think what we need to do then is just maybe tighten up step one of this. If we adopt something along the principles here that are listed, I think step one is where that check needs to occur. And we can say something like, you know, hey, I went to my registrar and they wouldn't dispute this transfer for me. They refused to. But so long as can demonstrate that the reason was other than the reason of we, the registrar, have no record that this person ever was ever associated with this domain name while it was under our sponsorship, or this domain name was never under our sponsorship. If it's something really basically, you know, something fundamentally throwing the claim out the window, I think the registrar can do that. I don't think that the registrar just wasn't really feeling very interested in talking to Barbara that day, so therefore we just let them off the hook. I don't think that's a legitimate reason, but I think that if a registrar comes back with something along the lines of, you know, we had no record of this person ever being involved and we didn't sponsor this domain name or something along those lines, I think that that sanity check needs to occur in step one, and that would probably resolve my concerns.
How about if it happened not in step, well, certainly could happen in step one, I would expect that, but that it also happens in step two, and for purposes of discussion. I'm going to skip the registry for now. I'm going to go to step two being compliance, and that compliance gets a hold of the registrar and asks the registrar those questions. And then the registrar says, no, you know, we've never heard of this person. that that would be the place that that sanity check would take place, so that the registrant has an avenue other than the registrar to elicit that information. That's sort of where I'm thinking the safeguard takes place. And so it would stop cold if the compliance folks went to the registrar and the registrar said, look, we've never heard of Mikey. He's just this complete unknown to us. And you know, then we get to the question that you're raising, James, which is, well, where does compliance get that data? And I think that's one that we need some research on, just to make sure that we're not putting compliance in a situation where they go to the registrar, the registrar says, we've never heard of Mikey, and there's no data independent of the registrar by which they can confirm or deny that claim. But I think that's one that we need a little research on. In principle, if that data was available, would you be okay with that? We let this happen twice, basically once at the registrar, clearly yes. If the registrar is emphatic, it says, dear registrant, we've never heard of you, you know, go away. And the registrant says, wait, you know, I that's not right. Then they need an avenue to challenge that. And if they challenge it, you know, if they lie and say, I really was, when in fact they weren't, that compliance gets to figure that out, or the registry, or somebody else, so that we have somebody besides the registrar in the loop. I heard you wincing at that. I'll let you wince, and I'll go to Lars and come back to it if you want. Lars, go ahead.
This is Lars. Thanks, Mikey. I just have a quick question. So, are these? Do you envisage these four steps to be that you first, if you're claiming, you contact your, I suppose, your original registrar first, and what you ask them is to launch a TDRP for you, and you only go to step two and three if they don't, or is this
no?
Is this even
independent?
Because I wasn't kidding with what James said, you know, how you see this. Just for my own clarification.
Let me try it, and then James can correct me. My vision of step one is that step one is precisely what happens today. I, as the registrant, go to my registrar and try to convince them of my claim, and the registrar, presuming my claim is true, then the registrar goes to work. They contact the other registrar. They presumably fail. Then it's entirely possible for the registrar to continue to launch a TDRP. You know, we would not disrupt that process. But this would be added on as an avenue, an additional path for the registrant to pursue in those events, I would hope very unlikely events, when the registrant either is unwilling to do that and the former registrant really feels, I'm sorry, I'm reversing terms, you know, feels they've been wronged and they need an appeal. And is that an old hand, Lars, or new? Old hand. James, is that consistent with sort of the way you'd envision this? And, you know, the rest of you, don't be shy. This isn't just the Mikey and James show. By all means, jump in and steer me right here. But back to you, James.
Well, I feel like I opened this can of worms, so I'm on the hook to
you know, darn right.
But
yeah.
take the first bite, I guess. So, yeah. But in general, I mean, I think that's right. I'm not trying to cause a problem here. I'm just thinking this from practical terms of registrar. You know, hey, I'm you know, Joe Smith from nowhere, Indiana, and I believe I have an original claim to Google.com. And I want you, registrar, under pain of ICANN compliance, to to initiate this process, or I'm going to escalate it to whatever channel is available. You know, it's just, there are weird situations out well, but let's just face it, there are weird people out there, you know, that will
let's
abuse
that
processes
case.
Like this. And I,
I mean, let's step that case along, because it seems to me that, you know, Joe Grab a Sandwich from Indiana goes to you. You guys blow him off and say, that's nuts. And you, in your reply, perhaps say something along the lines, of course, you're always welcome to take this up with ICANN compliance. However, we strongly advise you to be judicious of your use of that channel, because ICANN compliance will take an equally dim view of what are they called? I want to say spurious, but that's not it. When you file a lawsuit, that's is a term, a legal term for that. Well, anyway, you would call it a spurious, frivolous. There we go. Thank you. Thank you. You know, and I would even be willing, quite keen to work some sort of sanction for frivolous use of this into the policy, because, you know, I think at the same time that registrants need to be protected, so do registrars need to be protected from, you know, essentially being subjected to a legal DDoS attack. I mean, that's certainly not fair to registrars. Christine, welcome to the queue. Take it away.
Hi, thanks. This is Christine from AMP. My only comment as far as the, you know, the registrar doesn't feel that this is a legitimate claim, so you can go ahead and take it up with ICANN's compliance if you want. It's going to be a little bit circular, because ICANN compliance basically requires all sort of complaints with respect to any of these policies to go through their ticketing system, and their ticketing system is going to send an automated email to the registrar and say someone just complained that there was a unlawful transfer. So it's going to dump the problem back in the registrar's lap to start with. So I like the four steps. I think it's good, but I just think that at some point maybe there's a way to streamline that, because otherwise you're going to go to the registrar, the purported registrant is going to go to ICANN and just go right back to the registrar. So just one little practical thought.
Yeah, that's definitely one for the punch list of the flow of this that we need to iron out, because we don't want a circular process for sure. I think I saw James agreeing with you on that. And I agree as well. I think that's a very well taken point. Barbara and then James.
Thank you, Mikey. This is Barbara. So I guess my main concern, and I apologize, I actually had a couple of interruptions just now that I wasn't expecting. So if this was discussed, just let me know. I guess the concern that I would have would be where there are privacy services being used, and do registrars even have the ability to see the underlying registrant data in those particular instances? And then the other question that I have relating to this is, if it does end up, in step two, where, you know, we're talking of clearance at the registry, in the case of VeriSign, where we're a thin registry, we don't have registrant data, I'm not sure, you know, how we address something like that. Going forward, all the new GTLDs, obviously, you know, will be thick, but, in today's world, we know that not everyone is thick. And the same would apply as well in a particular case where, you know, if a proxy service is being used, registries have absolutely no insight into the underlying data.
Yeah, I think the general heading, and I think yours is a good one to add to that punch list, is the verification of authenticity of the registrant's claim. James, take it away.
Thanks, Mikey. James speaking. Just to address a subset of Barbara's question, if the privacy service obfuscated the registrant data or substituted its own data as a proxy service, then that proxy service would be the registrant, and that claim would be probably rejected. If it was an affiliated privacy or proxy service, I would think the registrar could have or could get at that underlying data, but if it was unaffiliated, then they would have to treat the privacy service as the previous registrant. So I don't know if that helps or not. But, you know, I think going back to Christine's point, Mikey, that was what I was trying to say in step one. We need to short-circuit that infinite loop that she described where it just goes from registrar to ICANN and back. And that's why I was thinking if we have some sort of a sanity check there that says that this is, you know, where a registrar could raise the flag and say, we didn't proceed with this because this is a frivolous claim.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think we need that built in for sure. And I think that the privacy thing raises an interesting abuse vector I hadn't thought about, which is I find a really tasty domain name that's under privacy, and if, especially if I, since in many cases I can figure out where it's under privacy, I could play games by claiming ownership of a name that would be very hard for anybody to verify because of the privacy provider that's being used. So that's another use case that we need to explore and figure out how we're going to deal with that. I guess where I'm at, I see nothing in the, you know, nobody in the queue. If there's anyone who wants to chime in, by all means, go ahead. But I want to kind of circle back around to the general idea. What I see us working on are certainly valid and correct issues that we need to figure out the answers to, but present, to me at least, showstoppers yet. Is there anybody that's essentially opposed to this idea in principle? Assuming we get the details right, I think we have to presume that away until we've got into the details. But, you know, if somebody's essentially saying, no, the process ought to stop at registrars, period, this is probably a good time to hear that. James, go ahead.
So I'm not opposed to the idea entirely. I'm opposed to any recommendation that removes the registrar entirely. I am not necessarily opposed to a process that goes beyond the registrar's involvement. But just that, just to be clear, that any wrinkle or flavor or iteration of this that would remove the registrar from the loop entirely, I think I would be opposed to that.
I would agree with that. So you got two votes on that one anyway. Christine, go ahead.
Hi, thanks. This is Christine from NAF. Yeah, I was going to mention I also do not oppose this. I think this is a good start, and I do not disagree that the registrar should be included in some way. I just wanted to make it clear that whatever we decide to do as far as that registrar contact, we need to assume that the majority of registrars do not have the size and sophistication of GoDaddy, for instance. So we need to make sure that, and I know because I just came off the UDRP LOC working group, where the entirety of the, you know, the process was dealing with the unsophisticated registrars that have absolutely no idea what to do when there's a problem. So the bigger registrars, you know, the ones that are conscientious and are trying to solve problems proactively, are not the ones that these, you know, solutions need to be targeted to. So I just want to make sure that when we come up with a solution, that we make sure that we know that we're talking, you know, one- and two-man operations that have no idea how to act. So when we're going to come up with a recommendation, we need to consider that as well. That's my only thought with respect to including the registrars.
Yeah, I think that's a good, and Barbara is agreeing with you as well, Christine. I think that's a good design criteria to put into this, that, you know, we need to acknowledge that, you know, probably the most burdened by this will be the less sophisticated registrars. Chris, go ahead.
Thanks, Mikey. No, I just wanted to chirp in on support for this, as I've said earlier. I think it's the solution that's, we're not ripping the whole engine apart and completely putting it back together, really. It's the simplest and probably the most effective solution of just putting this iterative loop in right at the beginning. Probably a good idea if we advise compliance as soon as possible of this and just check there isn't some feedback coming from them. But I would have thought a letter at the end of it, a letter from compliance to the registrar, require or instructing, I suppose, how strong it would be, instructing them to proceed to the TDRP would, you know, 99% of the cases I would have thought would be solved with this. It seems common sense that formality, if there's a registrar that has a laissez-faire attitude, that would make them sit up, it would escalate it within their organisation and start a resolution. Yeah, thanks.
So, you know, I'm starting to wonder, James, let me check signals with you as co-chair. You know, in the last one, we drew a bunch of use case pictures that helped us sort of work through this. Would that be sort of a next step? Maybe a little subgroup goes off and tries to draw out the various scenarios and likely steps along the way. I know we flushed a lot of moths out of the process when we did that with the change of registrant process. Go ahead.
I don't think that I think the only danger in doing that is it tends to take up a lot of time. But I think it might be overkill. I think we can actually, I think this is something that we can solve ourselves, maybe in between calls.
Yeah, and maybe just do it in text for first try.
Yeah.
You know, clearly the steps that we've got in here aren't right. And so I'd certainly be willing, maybe just the two of us, just go back and forth a few times on writing that little bulleted list for next time. It seemed like
I would be okay with that. I think Paul Diaz is disagreeing with something that we just said, or maybe it's an older.
No, he left. He had to scoot out.
That's do not disturb. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought it was disagree.
Yeah. No, he mentioned in a private chat to me that he had to scoot off, so he's just gotten dragged away. Okay, well, why don't we do that? Why don't James and I take a little action item to sort of bash away on a little revision of that series of steps? And I think that's probably enough on Charter C until we've had that chance to take a look at that. Is there anything else on Charter C that people want to talk about before I nudge us along to D? It's about 20 minutes to the top of the hour, so we've got a little time left. Lars, go ahead.
Thanks, Mikey. It's Lars. Just a very quick question. Do you want me to contact compliance already, or should I wait until you and James have threshed out something?
Let's wait. I think compliance tends, at least in prior iterations of this, they tend to like things that are a little better baked than this one is. And
one question, though, perhaps that Lars could help with, if I could jump in on that, would be to have a better understanding of the data retention requirements for current and new TLD registries.
Yes, that's true. I agree. Okay, Lars is on board with that. Okay, anything else on C for this call? Going once, going twice? Okay. On to D. What we've got here. D is the one that talks about requirements or best practices for registrars to make information on transfer dispute resolution options available to registrants. And again, the sort of summary is that there's pretty broad agreement that this something like this should get put in place. We kind of tied it to what happens in C, let's leave that for now. We've got a little list of questions. Who should define what those are and what's included? I think the second bullet in the remaining questions is really what information should be included and where. I'm not sure that we got to ICANN hosted, although I can't really remember the conversation well enough. I guess in the middle, maybe we did conclude that it was best hosted at ICANN so that then everybody could point at it. That's what that middle paragraph is about. James, this is sort of another one back to you. This is sort of your first time seeing it since you weren't able to join us last week. But by no means should it be limited to James. Is anybody uncomfortable with the direction that we're headed here? It would be a good time to talk about that, I think. Not seeing a queue building. Oh, good. All right, so that one more or less to bed. James is agreeing. We seem to be headed in the right direction there. So that kind of gets us through this agenda, unless people have other things to do. And I'm not terribly adverse to just letting us out a little bit early. James, depending on your immediately following meeting, do you just want to hang on and we could beat out a draft of the bullet point right now? I mean, we could just do it on the call. So.
Sorry, Mike. Yeah, it's going to have to be, I would say, okay. Looking more like Wednesday.
Okay.
We'll have to chat about that.
Thank you so much.
Sorry about that.
Okay. No worries. I just, saw that 15 minutes and thought, ooh, what a treat. Okay, I think that's it, folks. I think we'll end the call a little early today, and James and I will come back to you with a slightly revised version of that list and try and beat on that, and then maybe we'll sort of hammer on that a little bit and then move on to the next charter question, which is E in our next call. And with that, I think I'll call it quits. Thanks, gang.
Thanks, Mikey.
Thanks, James.
Thanks, Mikey. Thanks.